The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Turn our attention to our guest in studio for this Friday morning. We're speaking to Ms. Andisa West. She is an attorney at law here in Trinidad. As we get into the conversation relating to CARICOM and regional and international matters, of course, it will be remiss of us if we don't mention the CCJ, all right, which is the Caribbean Court of Justice, which is supposed to be the final court of justice, right?
No court of appeal for some members.
For some members.
Yeah.
All right. Just after adjust your mic. All right. Hold the mic and just... I'll fix it. So, again, good morning, Andisa. And that's an unusual name. I like that name, Andisa West. Good morning to you. Good morning to you. Attorney at law, very young and bright young lady in the studio with us this morning as we get into the conversation on CARICOM as it relates to the region and international matters. Let's first talk about CARICOM and the involvement of how do they come together as a conglomerate and deal with issues that are affecting the region.
Yes, good morning. And thank you so much for having me this morning. So CARICOM, I am young and still very passionate about CARICOM and the regional integration movement. As we may or may not know, the movement was formed by the Treaty of Chaguaramas, later revised by the Revised Treaty of Chaguaramas, mm-hmm. which established the movement and it also guides the movement. So all the rights of the member states are encompassed in that particular agreement, and they were all formed together for four main things, mainly foreign policy coordination, economic integration, and human and social development, as well as security. So that is the main four pillars of the movement, which guides all the other institutions, including, as you mentioned, the CCJ, where is also the CSME. There are a host of different things that guides the regional integration movement, particularly CARICOM. A lot of things that we often overlook, including CXC. So that's essentially what CARICOM and that particular regional integration movement is in a nutshell. Yeah.
I still confused a little bit, but I like the fact that you sort of give us some clarity on the matter. For me, you mentioned CXC. Why CXC?
Yes, because I think it is one of the success stories of CARICOM, because most of the member states, they're secondary school students write that particular exam. So it kind of shows and evidences that we can actually come together for one particular goal. And that, in my opinion, has been one of the success stories of CARICOM. And in addition to the University of the West Indies, it shows where there's some kind of coordination between all the member states, where for the most part, because I think Bahamas doesn't, not all Bahamian students write the CXC examination, but for the most part, most of the Caribbean students write that particular exam, and we have a coordinated effort along all member states. So yes, CXC.
You know, that was one of the... I totally love that answer that you gave as it relates to that question. Because it is a success story. We look at CXC and it's done across the board.
Yes, it does.
Now, when it comes to regional integration, as you mentioned, we are free to traverse throughout the entire region,
yes.
from country to country, even dwell there,
yes.
and employment without permits and all these things necessary.
Well, with some level of permits for some. So you will need the skills, national certificates in order to work in the other country. But for the most part, my judgment, once you're a member state of CARICOM, you're allowed to move freely within the member states. And you're supposed to be able to do that without any hassle. So in that particular case, when she entered Barbados, she was subjected to searches. And then they sent her back to Jamaica. And the Caribbean Court of Justice ruled that breached her rights in the Revised Treaty of Chaguaramas, which guarantees that once you're a member state of CARICOM, you should be allowed to move freely within the member states without any hassle.
But why was there a hassle to begin with, if this is understood?
Exactly. I guess at that point in time, they didn't necessarily recognize how far the Revised Treaty stretched, or at least the... Because, you know, sometimes the persons on the ground doesn't necessarily recognize what is... agreed upon on the higher levels. So that particular judgment solidified and highlighted that we can't just bypass what the member states agreed in the Revised Treaty of Chaguaramas, and essentially said, and they had to pay her damages.
I was not about to ask
yes.
you that. As a lawyer, when it comes to compensation, she would have had to pay her flight travels and all these things, maybe accommodation, all these things was paid, and they sent her back.
Yes.
She was She was turned around in the airport, I think it was.
Yeah, she was deported back to Jamaica.
Within
searched, serious searches. She was searched as though she was a drug mule. So she was also given damages to compensate for that as well, in addition to all the hassle that she had to go through. And that is another success story of CARICOM. The CCJ. I don't know if you want me to segue into that particular.
I would love you to segue into that particular
thing. So the Caribbean Court of Justice has a dual jurisdiction. The first jurisdiction would be the original jurisdiction, and that kind of presides over all matters dealing with the revised Treaty of Chagaramas. So if you breach your freedom of movement, anything, any of the rights guaranteed in the revised treaty, if it's breached, you are allowed to go to the CCJ for redress once you're a member state, including members of Trinidad, citizens of Trinidad and Tobago.
So, okay, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The second jurisdiction would be the appellate jurisdiction. And that's essentially, you go to the High Court, you appeal to the Court of Appeal, you appeal to the CCJ. That's the appellate jurisdiction. Trinidad and Tobago has not signed onto that jurisdiction. But once you are a member state, you are allowed to go to the CCJ under its original jurisdiction for redress as it relates to all matters dealing with the revised Treaty of Chagaramas.
Give an example as to why and how a Trinidadian, Trinidadian or Tobagonian mm-hmm. venturing in one of CARICOM countries mm-hmm. and what, get, you know, walk me through in layman's terms how they would end up before the CCJ seeking redress. Now, we understand this young lady from Jamaica when she went into Barbados.
Yes.
But if you want to use her as well, let's get the full consensus of the story, what happened or what could happen to citizens, mm-hmm. and this will put you before the CCJ mm-hmm. to get some serious redress.
Right. So maybe I should start by saying there are 15 member states of CARICOM, including Trinidad and Tobago.
15
member states, and there are some associate member states as well. That's like Haiti, some of the smaller countries that hasn't fully accepted the full scope of CARICOM. Mm. But we are 15 member states. Trinidad and Tobago is one. The revised Treaty of Chagaramas guarantees, for instance, the freedom of movement. It also has the economic bloc, so you should be able to do trade and ply your business within the economic block without any restrictions. So if you decide as a business owner that you want to go in Barbados and do your business there, but for some reason you get some kind of unfair, they now introduce some tax that is only going to affect you as a Trinidadian, you can go before the CCJ and say that they have now violated what the revised Treaty of Chagaramas has guaranteed you. Because it's not just freedom of movement, it's also an economic bloc. So there are a lot of judgments. TCL also went to the CCJ. There are several judgments with TCL where they went before the CCJ, essentially saying that, and persons carrying TCL before the CCJ as well, where they said that it essentially violated what was guaranteed to them in the CCJ. A very basic example would be the freedom of movement, because we all like to travel. So for instance, if you are a Trinidadian going into St. Lucia, and when you reach there, the immigration official, for some reason, tries to deny you entry, you can then carry that before the CCJ and say that you tried to enter St. Lucia and they have denied your ability to move freely within that country. Because they kind of extended it recently, but at the very basic level, you should be able to travel within the member states without any hassle, without any undue, without subjecting you to any searches because you're Trinidad. And once you can establish that, you can go before the CCJ and let them know that. And there has already been precedent set indicating that if that happens to you, you are entitled to redress.
And who pays the redress?
The member states, the country. So if it's St. Lucia that denied a Trinidad and Tobago national from entering into their country, St. Lucia would be the person in charge of paying you that redress.
And what currency?
That's the next thing. So more than likely, it would be the currency. The court could decide that. So that's the next thing that we need to figure out with CARICOM. That's probably one of the things that we have faltered behind with, because the member states can't agree on having a single currency. But that would definitely be something for the court to decide. And of course, your lawyers would be able to say, well, I'd prefer to be paid in this currency, that currency, etc.
But even if let's say for us, if we would have violated somebody's rights to to enter Trinidad and Tobago as a CARICOM state. And the lawyer of Barbados or Grenada says, listen, pay my client in U.S.
Mm-hmm.
We have a forex shortage in this country.
Yeah.
How are we going to pay it? We could push back and say, we deny and say, well, we're not paying you in that currency. If I say I want it in pounds.
I don't think that you could deny or demand.
Because the reason why I'm asking you the question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the valuation of the TT dollar versus that of Jamaica.
Jamaica, yes.
Right? I go to Jamaica frequently, to Miami, to these places I went, and I mean, I spent 1,250 Jamaican dollars.
Yes.
For some rice.
Yeah.
Some dal. So I'm just trying to show you.
Yeah.
So if I was denied entry into Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
and you tell me, well, listen, I gain you $1 million Jamaican mm-hmm. Jamaican money.
No, well,
so it's like
it wouldn't be a situation where they will give you a currency and it wouldn't. So it wouldn't just be $1 million Jamaican. More than likely, they would say, "This is your judgment," and it could convert into whatever currency. So whatever that is in TT. So if they said it's $1 million, we converted that into TT, and that's how much you'd be paid essentially.
That is it.
So
that is
even though there's the difference in currency, it isn't that they're just going to give you the lower 100 million Jamaica because it's less. It will essentially just be the equivalent of it.
So a figure will be called.
And
that has to be paid in your currency at your country.
Yes.
So if you in St. Vincent, do they have their own currency, right?
I think they're using EC. Yes.
Right. So if you're a Vincentian, mm-hmm. you'll be paid in EC dollars mm-hmm. equivalent. So whatever the judgment is, that figure will quantify
the equivalent of
Of your currency.
Mm-hmm.
And the violating country or island will have their government
have to pay
you in your bank account.
Yeah.
In lieu of that, what happens? But before you answer that question, let me take this quick commercial break, as this block is pretty huge. So let me just clear this commercial, and when we come back, we'll chat some more on CARICOM issues and international related matters. Stay with us.
Engage with Davey on the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Good morning again, Trinidad and Tobago. Welcome back to the Morning Rumble, the biggest show here on Freedom 106.5 FM. And Andisa West is in the building with me, an attorney at law, young attorney at law. And we're speaking on matters of CARICOM and international and matters internationally as well. And she is a defense attorney, a criminal defense attorney. And she is very well versed in CARICOM law and matters affecting us on that level. I have a lot of messages coming in as well. Again, just want to remind persons that our lines are down. This is a general reminder again. Thank you so much. And yes, I did mention that in the first hour this morning when I discovered it. So yeah, we continue to experience some difficulties with our telephone lines this morning. But feel free to WhatsApp me, voice notes or otherwise, on 306-1065. Please be respectful of your voice notes. And let's keep this thing going. It's just about 16 minutes before the hour of... What time is it? 8 o'clock, right? Before the hour of 8. Miss West, good morning again. We was
good
just
morning.
Getting into our conversation here with giving examples of the CCG and how someone will go before the CCG.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about the business aspect. We have free movement in mm-hmm. of CARICOM to go over to different countries. You did mention that if I take my business to Barbados
mm-hmm.
and they impose some tax that seems to affect me only, I now have a case before the CCG.
Yeah.
You also reiterated the fact that when you go before the CCG, the currency will be paid. Whatever judgment could be paid
to
your currency. But is that enshrined within, or is it something that...
So the thing about it is, I don't necessarily think it is enshrined, but we have extremely amazing judges on the Caribbean Court of Justice. I don't think that we recognize how knowledgeable and versed they are on the Caribbean, firstly, and regional integration. So I think that they will consider all the circumstances of the particular case when making a decision. And then obviously it would be for your lawyers to advance this or that. Because as I said, we haven't reached the point, or I'm not certain if we will ever reach to the point where there is a familiar currency that everyone is using across CARICOM. So obviously that would be an obstacle that the judges on the CCJ would have to overcome whenever they are given their judgments. Yes.
So that's something that they need to look into.
Yes, yeah.
And they have not been able to successfully do that so far.
They may have, but I think it's just a matter of giving the currency in the victim. And then if you want it to be converted, otherwise you do so. Because I believe in even in the Shinik Mary decision, she was given damages in Jamaican, in the Jamaican currency, because she was a Jamaican citizen. Yeah.
And just finally, I want to say to persons out there, continue to try to call me. All right, we wouldn't know. I want to test and make sure the lines are. I wouldn't know when it comes up, because on my end, I'm getting the dial tone. Right, so I guess it's incoming calls. We are unable. I'm not sure. So you can keep trying. See if you get through. And maybe it might show up. But I know currently, I tried from my phone, and the calls are not going through at all. But I guess the report was made, so we urge you to keep trying during the course of the day to see if you get through. As we continue with our discourse this morning, let's talk about businesses. Let's talk about this Treaty of Sagaramus, the amended treaty of what year?
1973. Revised Treaty of Sagaramus. It was
revised. When was it revised? Do you know?
1973.
1973,
yes.
Was it coming down?
Yes.
All right. So does it allow for me to go to another country and take my business as it's registered in Trinidad? Would I now have to register that business in another country?
So there are still some quirks that the movement is trying to rectify. But for the most part, if you're a business registered in Trinidad and Tobago, you're allowed to set up shop in another country. And mind you, this has been going on for quite some time. Trinidad and Tobago, if you traveled, I'm certain that you probably have traveled to other Caribbean countries and seen Trinidad and Tobago businesses there, seen Trinidad and Tobago snacks or beverages or products in the other countries. So essentially what the revised treaty says is that you should be able to do that without any unfair treatment. So if you decide to set up shop and let's just say, for an example, it's a beverage that is high in sugar content, or something like that, and then the government decides that they are going to impose a tax that only targets that particular beverage, then you can go and say, well, hey, the government of Barbados, Jamaica, whichever country that is, has now affected my ability to operate my business there as allowed to me in the revised Treaty of Sagaramus. And as I said, there has been several judgments. So that's there are several judgments on the CCJ.
So it's still our countries that breaching that, right?
There have been. Because some countries don't necessarily firstly understand the revised Treaty of Sagaramus. And then, you know, there's always a person on the ground who isn't as knowledgeable. So you might meet an immigration officer, for instance, like as Shinik Mary did, who probably was just having a bad day and decide that they're going to give you a hard time. You could carry that and then get damaged for it because it breaches your...
But then what happens to the officers that breach this thing? I mean, if you're not privy, your superiors, what takes place, that said officer in the Shinik Mary case, what happens then?
That's essentially up to the government. That's just like in Trinidad and Tobago. If it's a police officer who wrongfully arrests someone and you take the state to court, the state has to pay because it's the agent of the state. You're functioning for and on behalf of the state. So and as an attorney, I wouldn't go behind... I'm not saying anything, but you wouldn't necessarily go behind the person who probably doesn't have the ability to pay. More than likely, you'll go behind the state. And that person is acting for and on behalf of the state.
And that person should be made to answer.
To account for it.
And account for what is happening. Let me go ahead.
No, and I was just going to highlight again how amazing and knowledgeable the judges on the Caribbean Court of Justice are. So we talked at length on the original jurisdiction, but as I mentioned, the Trinidad and Tobago has not signed on to the appellate jurisdiction. And funny enough, when I believe now deceased past Prime Minister Basil Pandey, when he was in power, at that time he had advocated for the Caribbean Court of Justice to be built in Trinidad and Tobago. So the CCJ, it's the physical building,
headquarters is somewhere up the street there.
In Henry Street. Notwithstanding the fact that Trinidad and Tobago has still not signed on to the appellate jurisdiction.
How important is it for us to sign into that appellate jurisdiction? What does it represent?
It has now become a debate. Some attorneys believe that we should continue going forward with the Privy Council because it's separate and it's independent and it kind of, you know, separates the ability of the judges being corrupted and all these different things. I continue to believe that the best thing that we should do is sign on to the appellate jurisdiction of the Caribbean Court of Justice.
And make it the final stop.
For several reasons. when COVID occurred, a lot of the courts were kind of in a panic trying to figure out how to move forward, because now you'd have to halt physical court. Nobody can go into the court to actually have their cases heard. The CCJ continued uninterrupted because they had, from very long ago, had the virtual platform, because they were already operating for different
countries,
jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. So they continued uninterrupted. We can't say that the judges aren't as smart as the judges in the Privy Council, because we had Caribbean judges sitting on the Privy Council, first of all, and you can read any judgment, test any judgment of the CCJ, and you realize how legally, in my opinion, sound it is. They go at pains to explain their decisions, and I think one of the most important things is these are judges that have lived and operated in the Caribbean. We often have one or two judges who are from another country, but for the most part, these are judges that live and operate within the Caribbean. They understand our unique circumstances, and they are able to give decision that reflects the will of the Caribbean people, that I think the judges in the Privy Council just can't do. Oftentimes when they give their, I wouldn't say can't, because can't is a strong word, but oftentimes when they give their decisions, they say, we'll rely on what the appellate, the Court of Appeal said, as it relates to the facts, the circumstances, because we just can't understand it. Oftentimes they say that. So, and oftentimes they have indicated in their judgment that one or two judgments says, now is the time for these countries to take the final step and get rid of the Privy Council, go ahead with the CCJ. Oftentimes they have said that. But at the same time, we continue to have persons who question the ability of the Caribbean Court of Justice to be the final court of appeal of Trinidad and Tobago.
Now, there's a reason for that, and it's a question I want to ask you, and I want to thank you so much for staying in a little after eight with us, sir, because, listen, I wasn't apprehensive about the interview, but I am recognizing the importance of it now.
Yes.
And I'm very, very happy that you're sitting here with us this morning. Now, you said corruption, and the reason why a lot of arguments was, let's stick with the Privy Council, is because, you know, that's really, you can't reach them to bribe them. You had already, it had.
Right.
Is the CCJ made up of just Trinidad and Tobago judges, or is this judges that sit on this virtual platform mm-hmm. across the Caribbean, mm-hmm. multiple judges?
Yeah, they also sit physically at the court as well sometimes.
So they will travel into the country?
If you want to, if you prefer to do that, but if you don't want to spend, and that's the next thing, before I go into that, if you want to go to the Privy Council, you need to hire Queen's Counsel there. So your client would have to pay the cost of that. And you have to travel there. Well, sometimes with COVID, we kind of went virtual a bit. But in the past, you had to travel there.
To London.
In order to. So there's a cost that the ordinary man on the street can't pay. And you're paying Queen's Counsel there in pounds. You can't tell them you're giving them Trinidad and Tobago currency. So that was a cost that I think cost continues to be a barrier to access justice. So we continue to allow things to, if you don't have the money to go to the Privy Council, how you,
wherever you get your tea.
Exactly.
And you're forced to accept
exactly,
it.
Exactly. As opposed to the Caribbean Court of Justice that's right on Henry Street. And if you can't make it there, you could probably go virtually. But anyhow, people question the ability to reach the judges there. And for some reason, think that we can reach the judges in Trinidad and Tobago. There are several mechanisms in place mm-hmm. that protect the independence of the judges on the CCJ. It isn't firstly made up only of judges from Trinidad and Tobago. It's made up of judges throughout the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. You have to apply to the RJLSC, which is the Regional Judicial Legal Service Commission, and they are the persons who select the judges. It isn't selected based on it has to be a Trinidadian. It has to be whoever is the best after they apply and do the interview. That's the person who they select as judges. We have Trinidadians. We actually, at one point, we had Justice Witt, who was from out of the Caribbean as well. He recently passed. So it is made up of a very diverse panel.
And it's not just one country.
Bribery
as corruption.
Exactly.
It's a bit far reach.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, the past president was the Honorable Mr. Justice Saunders, who was from St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Not a Trinidadian. So it isn't as though only one country has a monopoly over the board of the CCJ. And also, it isn't as though one country has funding over it either. There was a fund
that was allocated for that.
That is separate and apart from any country. So it isn't a situation where the court depends on, because we know there's the big three, Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaica, Barbados. So it isn't as though the court is dependent on funding from Trinidad. And if Trinidad decides to withdraw its funding, it wouldn't be able to continue.
Good morning again, Trinidad and Tobago. 11 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, we're talking to Andisa.
Yes, Andisa West.
Andisa West. Andisa, thank you again so much. And I know we have a few moments with you because you have to go to court. She is an attorney, so she has court this morning. So as we wrap up, when it comes to the appellate court, right? Or the appellate, is it the
appellate jurisdiction?
Appellate jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. Why is it so important for us to take it? Just remind our listeners, please.
I think as an independent nation who is trying to etch its way in this world, we definitely need a Caribbean judge, a Caribbean court to help us on that journey. That's just my humble opinion. And I think that the judgments of the CCJ isn't any less or any more than the judgments of the Privy Council. I might actually argue that it's probably more at times. So there isn't an issue with competency. It isn't an issue with expertise. Nothing like that. I think the CCJ can't stand up to the scrutiny that is often thrown at it, especially as it relates to the corruption, because there are several mechanisms in place to ensure that the judges remain untouched from the corruption of the Caribbean governments and the politicians, etc. So I will continue to be an advocate for Trinidad and Tobago. I mean, for God's sake, the court is in Trinidad and Tobago on Henry Street, and we're still not signed on to the appellate jurisdiction. And not necessarily to make it about politics, because I don't swing here nor there. But after past President Basio Pandey advocated for it to be in Trinidad and Tobago, when he went into the opposition, he voted against it. So it's really and truly just a matter of political will to take that step to move forward and sign on. And I personally think that the ordinary man on the street would have greater access to justice because of that. The ordinary man on the street will see, so that it wouldn't just be only who could afford to go to the Privy Council can go to the Privy Council. We'll open a whole other category for persons. So I know that it's a debate, and I understand the concerns that there are, and maybe work can be done to address those concerns properly. But I continue to be a strong advocate, firstly, for CARICOM, regional integration, and the Caribbean Court of Justice.
My final question to you, because you have to go to court now. How is your peers faring in this area? I mean, you are a young attorney. I don't know how long you have been practicing, but you're a young attorney, and you have this wealth of knowledge and understanding of the CCJ and the importance and significance of it. What about your counterparts, those in your field? How are they viewing this?
Actually say that I am not the unicorn in the bunch. I did my LLB at Barbados in Cave Hill, and I think that my classroom, that's where we had these discussions. Even the topic of how expensive it is to travel within the region, they were strong advocates for that. I know Dr. Delano, he was a student at Cave Hill. He's now a doctor and lectures in the university, and he does his research on these things, and there are studies on these things. I was in UEStat, and we did several discussions. We would just meet a whole group of us and have discussions about these things. So I think that there are lots of Caribbean young persons who continue to be very strong and passionate about the regional integration.
But what about the seniors? Those learned luminaries?
I believe some of the seniors as well. Some of the seniors, TJ. But I think another success story is UE. And it is at UE that I became this passionate about regional integration.
You know what?
And it is at UE that we have these conversations. So it isn't as though I'm a unicorn in the bunch. There are a lot of persons who are very passionate about it as well. And there are a lot of persons who have dedicated their life to doing research on regional integration and all the different issues concerning it. So, yeah.
Congratulations, huh? You have now lit a fire under me, and I am now an advocate for it now because yes. I understand it a little more. Yes. We talked off air, and she did explain some stuff. Unfortunately, guys, I was hoping to keep her until at least 8:30, but we have to wrap the interview because she has to get to court, and we can't play with the court.
Exactly.
Okay, my lady?
Yes. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.